Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan at SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 82. And for our listeners, of course, today is Tuesday. We changed our schedule a little bit as we move into the offseason, and we are officially fully into the offseason here as news obviously comes in bits and pieces, not just Steeler news, but really league news, and things won't get active again, but they will when we get into March 5th, and I think that's the date for the new NFL year, and obviously all of that transition into the free agency period, we'll have that to talk about, and then, of course, we will start feeding you tons of draft coverage, and Alex will be sitting in doing some of the work, Dave, and we'll get into that, shooting for the draft coming up. Is it in Chicago this year, the end of April? I'm trying to remember where it is. I know it was in Philly. That was pretty successful. Is it Chicago this year or is it somewhere else?
The Big D.
Dallas.
Dallas, yeah. AT&T Stadium on April 26th through the 28th is this year's draft. Now, you were talking about the start of the new league year. That's actually on the 14th. About the middle of the month this
March 14th.
Year.
Okay, missed it by a week or so.
Yeah, now the March 6th is the deadline for clubs to designate the franchise and transition players. So, I mean, and remember, Dave, today is the 13th, and the 20th, a week from today, is the first day for clubs to designate franchise or transition players. And remember, that's the kind of the self-imposed deadline by Le'Veon Bell. You know, he kind of threw it out there that you know, thought that maybe a new contractor would be done by then. You know, the way the Steelers, and we'll talk about this here, I'm sure, in a minute here, the way the Steelers are moving some money around. I don't know. You have to wonder, you know. Look, we expected them to move money around anyway here via the restructures and all like that. But we went over what Art Rooney II said last week, talking about how he hopes to have a long-term deal, get a long-term deal done with Bell as well, too. So things are going to start really moving pretty quickly here. There's a nice little, I guess, lull, if you will. Of course, we just went through our first official Sunday, without any football, but you had the first day of, you know, like I said, the league calendar's heating up quickly. And then, of course, the NFL scouting combine gets underway in Indianapolis later this month as well too. So yeah, you're right. It might be a little bit of sporadic news here and there, but you know, it's going to heat back up real quick. And ain't it great, the 365 day a year NFL calendar?
Yeah. Okay. So let's. People know how our coverage will go now. The plan is for us, as best we can, we'll keep to a Tuesday and Friday schedule. We may tweak that a little bit around the start of free agency and the start of the NFL draft. But, you know, we'll try and get some guests on here in the offseason. We'll definitely try and get our listeners more involved. If they have some questions, maybe dedicate a show here and there to – questions and thoughts that you may have. So, you know, if you got things to say, let us know. Also, just in terms of some housekeeping type of stuff, Dave mentioned some IT software development ideas that he had. And if you have a background in that, we got a couple emails on that front. So appreciate those. But if you're interested, send us an email. You know, the logo and the opening song, we kind of don't pay as much attention to getting that right as we should. We've done some different things, and we've had some people talk to us in the off season about that, or during the season about that kind of stuff. This is the time to get in touch with us if you want to get involved in some redesign and things like that. We are looking at our advertising or lack of advertising format and trying to figure out a way that we can monetize this a little bit more. Of course, Dave and I spend a lot of time doing this. We do it because we love doing it. But if we can do a little better job of making some money out of it, particularly with me not working at the moment, and Dave being out in Vegas and having that going on, we'd like to be able to do that as well. So this is a good time to engage with us a little bit more. We do the best we can to be in touch during the season, but we don't do a perfect job of that. But we'll continue to try and improve in all those areas and make the show better, more interesting, more enjoyable for you, hopefully. So that's the housekeeping stuff. So Dave, let's kick things off a little bit with this time of year, after Art sends out the bat signal and gets his message out there with the various groups of people that he does. This is when we start to see some contracts, more contracts get signed. A lot of stuff gets done as soon as the season ends, and the Steelers did a really good job of getting what they wanted done at that point. So that got done, and then you have the situation where you start the restructures. The Steelers didn't restructure last year, and that's always a good thing if you don't have to do that, because you know we talked about it with bigger contracts in the past. Guys get they get paid, they get their money, and then it's off the books. When you restructure, you are to some degree kicking the can down the road a little bit. But it's all going to get paid out if a guy stays with the team. And the guy, Dave, you can take us through the numbers of two guys that we certainly expect to be staying with the team long term throughout their contract. And those got done this week.
Just to clarify there, last year right before the start of the season, the Steelers did restructure the contract of Cameron Hayward to free up some cap space, and right after they had traded for J.J. Wilcox, they moved some money around with his deal to free up some room as well too. But but basically what you were trying to get across is that big picture wise, last offseason, this time on until the start. Look, the reason they did Cam Hayward, I think, was mostly due to the fact of Joe Hayden and things of those nature, things that come up that they probably weren't thinking were going to come up. But yeah,
right, good point. Unforeseen stuff that they wanted to take advantage of.
Right, exactly, and it just goes to show you nothing's they. It's a good lesson, I think, learned last year that, yeah, they did not restructure during the main part of the offseason. However, they were willing to do so to add a player that they liked. And, we've heard for years, hate to keep banging on, but we've heard for years how Barnwell and some of these major media guys, and even who was it, Andrew Brandt, I think. And Andrew Brandt's a guy I respect quite a bit, talking about the business of football, just constantly berating the Steelers for restructuring contracts. And the fact of the matter is, it's kicking the can down the road, and yeah, you put yourself at risk, a la the Lamar Woodley contracts and the Willie Colon contracts. Not everything's going to play out perfectly where you're not left holding the bag of a large portion of dead money. That happens. But once again, as I continue to tell people, that they get upset every time the Steelers do these restructures, it's part of the sins of having a lot of good players under contract to lucrative deals along with a franchise quarterback. I mean, it's just part of the sins that go along with it. And be thankful that you have a owner an owner group led by the Rooneys that are willing to spend up to the cash floor nearly every year. Whereas you have teams like Cleveland that that just do the minimum cash floor. So I understand why people get, or I somewhat understand why people get mad with these restructures. But look, if you want to compete and put together the best 53-man roster possible throughout a season, and you have good players under contract, these are necessary evils. And as you mentioned, David DeCastro and Stephon Tuitt are the two players so far this offseason who have had their contracts restructured. If any of you read my post right immediately after the Steelers were eliminated from the playoffs, giving you a kind of foreshadowing what's to come salary cap wise for the Steelers, you should know that both these moves were pretty much expected, especially Tuitt, who had just signed the new deal just prior prior to the start of the 2017 regular season. The restructures of both these players effectively cleared up a little more than $13.26 million in salary cap space, and that's a bunch just out of two restructures there. So there are other players they can go to, most notably Antonio Brown, and if they even needed to, Alejandro Villanueva are two other guys that they could go to restructures. We'll see if they do that. But, you know, it makes you kind of wonder with the timing of this and all, and the amount that was done, if indeed that, you know, are they planning on tagging Le'Veon Bell, or are they planning on a long-term deal to be announced very soon for Le'Veon Bell? And I think it's going to be an either-or.
Yeah, it's you certainly would get that impression from what Art said, that, you know, Le'Veon Bell's, you know, going to be a Steeler. I would still, you know, if somebody asked me, I would say tag or let walk, don't do a long-term deal, or don't do anything different than you offered last time and maybe a year less. So, but I don't, you know, I just come back to the questions. I don't understand how they got from where they were last year with the Steelers offering what, see, again, we didn't have all the exact details, but if what was leaked was generally true, and we kind of have to go on that assumption, if that was generally the case, I just don't get why Le'Veon Bell didn't take the deal then and would want to take it now. But, you know, he got a year under his belt, relatively healthy. He got a lot of touches, of course, but he's got $12 million more in his bank account. So in a sense, if he kicked the can down the road a year to get the deal, then, and I guess you can look at it as he's adding on to the back end of his career if he got exactly the same offer. So maybe that was his objective, just get one more year and then sign that deal a year later, to add a year under the back end, essentially, is what he's done. So if that's the outlook, I don't know, it seems like a risk, but maybe you take the insurance policy out and it's a risk he thought was worth taking. It's going to be interesting to watch how it plays out. I guess I'd put it, you know, now 80%, 85% that Le'Veon Bell is going to be a Steeler in the 2018 season. I don't think it's 100%, but it's higher than I would have put it certainly before Art spoke and before we heard Le'Veon Bell speak at various times. Now, again, the Steelers, you know, they may have made these cap moves regardless of how they viewed the Le'Veon Bell situation. And the additional cap hit for Le'Veon Bell here in the first year of the contract is not going to obviously eat up the entire amount of money that they created. This gives them flexibility to do other things as well. Le'Veon Bell took the cap hit. You know, the Steelers took the $12.1 million cap hit. I can't imagine Le'Veon Bell is going to have guaranteed first-year money in excess of $20 million. So might eat up somewhere along about half the cap money potentially that was created with the two restructures DeCastro into it, but it gives them some other flexibility. And so you have that situation with Le'Veon Bell. And then, of course, if we look at Ben Roethlisberger, and Dave, as far back as a month ago, you know, you were ahead of the curve here, as usual. You mentioned that maybe, you know, you're looking for a situation where Ben Roethlisberger signs an extension. And, of course, we look at what's gone on around the NFL, and, you know, it baffles me that people keep pointing to these contracts as if it's news. Well, let me get ahead of that curve and tell you when Drew Brees signs his next contract and, you know, Kirk Cousins signs his contract and the other guys sign their contract, they all are kind of superseding the previous contract, the highest contract in the league, which was Matthew Stafford. Matthew Stafford's a very good quarterback. Follows the game and saying Jimmy Garoppolo is the best quarterback in football. But it's whosever turn it is gets paid the most amount of money. Now there are going to be plenty of guys who aren't in that conversation, the Case McKeenums, the Josh McCowns, the Alex Smiths, you know, whatever, but they're all going to make a ton of money as well. Well, Ben's going to be in that conversation, and it's a question of whether he, you know, the ego when he cares and they want to make a statement. If he signs an extension, is it going to be $30 million a year? Does it need to be $26 million? Is it going to be $32 million? We don't know the exact numbers, but that will certainly eat up the rest of that cap space. Not that they don't have other things they can do, and they can certainly manage how they pay Ben Roethlisberger. But if that comes down the pike, Dave, obviously, then those will be the two major things to that with the current guy, the current group of guys, and the situations where they are that are going to look at the cap space and take up most of that $13 million with DeCastro into it.
Yeah, and look, I don't know if it's going to get done with Ben in the next few weeks or if it's going to be a year from now. I mean, Art Rooney evidently would not commit to saying if it's going to be now or later. Not hearing the exact, not hearing him speak it myself and knowing what kind of context to put into it, but the way it's been written and reported, one would lead you to believe maybe that it won't get done this offseason and maybe next offseason instead. Either way, Ben obviously wants to play longer than what his current contract runs through. He would just, with all these quarterbacks do, why not get out in front of it a little bit early and save yourself a couple of million, I guess. But we'll see. And look, an extension, if done right, or if done, one of 18 different ways, can potentially free up around, $7 to $8 million in cap space this year in doing so. So we'll keep an eye on that. Like I said, I don't know, I don't have an idea whether or not that indeed is going to happen or not with him. But if it does happen, it's going to happen, within the next month before the start of the new league year because of the roster bonus that he's due. And then going back to talking about DeCastro and Tuitt and the timing of these restructures, keep in mind that these are being done now because guys like DeCastro and Tuitt are due or were due, pretty sizable roster bonuses at the start of the new league year. So it makes sense to go ahead and do that to turn those roster bonuses, the complete roster bonuses, into a signing bonus in addition to a very large portion of the base salary. Both those players are due into signing bonuses as well. So that's why that's being done now. We'll keep an eye on guys like Antonio Brown. Between Antonio Brown and Alejandro Villanueva, it's more likely that Antonio Brown's a restructure candidate. Villanueva, I think you only free up something like a little over $3 million in restructuring him. So really, in my opinion, you really have to probably have a plan, thinking that you're going to need to do that with a kind of a little bit older, tackle in Alejandro Villanueva. So don't count on Villanueva being done. And look, being as how Antonio Brown was not listed, as part of, not that it can't be done here in the next 24 hours and we find out that he got restructured as well too, but there's no guarantee that they'll have to restructure Antonio Brown, here in the coming days. And, for those of you, look, and I wrote about this over the weekend, this might be the start of a few more cost, cap cutting moves here. But with that said, and I think David and I have kind of already addressed this, yes, I understand people want Mike Mitchell thrown out of town as quickly as possible to free up $5 million in salary cap space prior to him being displaced in the top 51. Keep in mind that, if you better have a plan that that could go into effect quickly if you're taking last year's starting safety and throwing him out on the trash heap. And, J.J. Wilcox, I think, is a guy that you will see cut sooner rather than later to free up, $3.125 million prior to roster displacement with him. But don't count on both J.J. Wilcox and Mike Mitchell to be thrown on the trash heap prior to the start of the new league year. Now, this does not mean that Mike Mitchell might not eventually be, cut prior to the start of the 2018 season. It really does not make a lot of sense, in my opinion, to cut him right now. And for those of you that are lined up waiting for the news for William Gay, Cody Sensabaugh, and Darius Hayward-Bey to all be cut prior to March, 14th, look, there's a possibility that happens, but the end result, by cutting those three players clears only, and I say only, but it's just $4.35 million between those three players, and then once you factor in the roster displacement and all, you're only saving, you know, just under $3 million in salary cap space. So while, yes, these guys might not make the 2018 53-man roster, there's no real reason to cut them now.
Okay, Dave, good stuff. Now, let me ask you a question that I'm not 100% clear on, and I imagine some of our listeners aren't either. If we make the assumption that Ryan Shazier is not going to play football this year, we know the Steelers picked up his fifth-year option at $8.5 million. We know that that's guaranteed for injury, so that he's going to get that money. How does that impact the Steelers cap? Is that just effectively going to be dead money for the Steelers? Do they get any recourse to that in terms of if Shazier has a long-term disability? Does that impact the cap at all, or is that just an $8.5 million cap hit and you move on from there?
Yeah, it is what it is. There's no way around it. I suspect he'll stay under contract. Assuming he can't participate this year, one would think that when camp opens, he'll be placed on the PUP list, okay, at the start of camp, on what they call the active PUP list. Obviously, if he's not ready by the start of the season, I'm sure he will go to reserve PUP at that point, and then he can stay on reserve PUP all season. And then, of course, by the deadline, by the PUP deadline, if not activated, it's kind of like a default move into injured reserve. So the thing is, if he spends the entire season on PUP, his contract should toll, just like Mike Adams a few years ago, and just like do you remember that with the back injury where Mike Adams spent, and it has to be the final year of the contract, in order for a season to toll like that. And such would be the case with Shazier. As far as everything I have read concerning the CBA on that. So if by some, let's suppose Shazier needs a full year to get himself right and is able to play, well, then you get back into the situation this time next offseason where his contract tolls at the same price of what it was over $8 million this year, and then you make the decision what you're going to do from that point forward. But outside of them signing him to a new deal right now, let's face it, if Ryan Shazier was healthy, he'd be a player that we would expect to have a new deal done at some point during this offseason. Now,
it's not happening.
Right,
not signing another deal.
Right, people with all these hot takes on the internet saying, well, they should just sign him to a false kind of extension, just to lower his cap hit this year. Look, that it sounds great in theory and all, but it is what it is, just a hot take, and stuff like that just is not going to happen. They're not going to sign him to a long-term extension. At least I would be shocked if they did that now. But once again, there's no way around that cap hit right now, because once they picked up that fifth-year option, it became fully guaranteed for injury only, and that, of course, is what he suffered.
Okay. Let's
We forgot to talk about Roosevelt Nicks. Rosie is a player that was scheduled to be a restricted free agent this offseason. If nothing happened, he was going to get a tender at some level, either the right of first refusal or a second round tender. Well, don't have to worry about that right now, because he signed a 4-year contract with the Steelers a few days ago. And when you look at the fullback market around the league and everything that goes along with it, one would think that his average yearly value of his new deal, which we should have the numbers probably within 24 to 48 hours from now, will be around, probably slightly more than, or right around $2 million, or slightly more than $2 million per season.
Okay. Looking around the NFL, the big news around the NFL, certainly just in terms of what happened that was a surprise that we haven't touched on, is the coaching changes around the league, as I was telling people toward the end of the season, were going to be much fewer than the crazy numbers that Jay Glazer and a lot of other people were throwing out there, that, you know, they're going to have 13 to 15 new coaches in the NFL. The numbers more or less came in where I thought they'd come in. I don't know if we finished with 7 or 8, but the Josh McDaniels to the Colts thing seemed to be a done deal for the final, you know, almost from the start of the playoffs. I mean, it looked like Matt Patricia was going to initially maybe get the Giants job, and then he ended up, of course, going to the Lions, and that was fait accompli when the Giants made their decision about which direction they were going to go. And then it was, you know, there was one job open and there was one candidate for that job, and clearly there had been plenty of conversations, and clearly the expectation for the Colts was that Josh McDaniels, after the Super Bowl, would, you know, sign his contract and move forward. He decided not to do that. Now, I don't fall into the Tony Dungy camp or the camp of many others that Josh McDaniels, you know, did something that was evil and despicable and whatever. Josh McDaniels didn't sign a contract. And at the end of the day, even if he had signed the contract, it's not always the right decision, and guys back out of some of these things. But he didn't sign the contract. Now, obviously, he went down the road and thought, I'm sure there was a point where he thought that he wanted to be the Colts' next head coach, and that, and he pursued the job. And the Colts decided he was the right guy. You don't want this stuff to go the route that this did, but it did, and he stepped away and went back with whatever enticements Bob Kraft and Bill Belichick gave him to stay as the offensive coordinator for the Patriots. He stayed. So that left the job open. And, you know, to be honest with you, I haven't studied the Colts' coaching search enough in terms of who all they interviewed while they were interviewing McDaniels, because I just assumed McDaniels was getting that job, as many others did. So they get a mulligan in terms of making the decision. No doubt Frank Reich's stock went up over the course of the playoffs as the Eagles won the Super Bowl, and I have no doubt that Frank Reich would not be the coach of the Colts today had the Eagles not won the Super Bowl, but they did win the Super Bowl, and it just shows you how narrow and I'm not sure what the exact right word is, Dave, but just how, you know, fleeting the opportunities are for a guy to get a head coaching job. Who knows if Frank Reich ever would have been in a position to get another head coaching job, but he got this one because Josh McDaniels didn't, and because the Eagles won the Super Bowl. And I highly recommend, I'm not the biggest fan of Peter King, but Monday Morning Quarterback article that came out on Monday of this week called Wristband 145, and it's an in-depth look of the play that Zach Ertz scored the winning touchdown in the Super Bowl. It's just a really good article if you're interested in kind of play design, play development, how guys spend their time during the week cutting up film, what they look at. They talk about all this stuff, and there's a young guy, Al Groh's son, is the receivers coach for the Eagles, and he's a young guy responsible for bunch formations and looking at things and cutting up film during the week and making suggestions that goes to Reich and then to Peterson, and that was a play that they put in over the course of the season. So it's a really good read. Coming back to the bigger picture, the Colts get their guy. They had some assistance in place, which they honored the contracts that were signed. And they'll move forward now. Now it certainly appears that the NFL coaching carousel for the 2017 offseason is now complete, with everybody more or less having their staffs in place.
I don't think this could have worked out any better for the Colts. I got to be honest with you. And immediately after Josh McDaniels, got cold feet or whatever, bowed out of that position, I put on Twitter that the Colts need to pursue Frank Reich. And lo and behold, that ended up happening. I think this worked out swimmingly for them. I think they're going to feel blessed. Look, Josh McDaniels, say what you will about him, he's a great offensive coordinator. Some guys just don't make great head coaches. Todd Haley. Some guys are just good.
Right. I mean, you're not really willing to close the book on Josh McDaniels as a head coach, right? I mean, Bill Belichick didn't have a great run in Cleveland. He became maybe the best head coach ever. We've seen a limited sample size where he wasn't very successful.
Right, right. But, I mean, look, this is not going to look good for Josh McDaniel doing what he doing what he did, and especially with his already, you know, there's some teams I'm sure that because of what happened during his time in Denver in a way, kind of he handled himself there, probably might feel they're done with him. However, winning. People, you know, if you win, you're always going to be
sure. Bill Belichick did the same thing on the Jets. Walked out on the Jets to go take another job.
Right.
So.
If you win, you're always going to be in some consideration. I'm not going to say that Josh McDaniels is not going to get another head coaching job. But I mean, look back to Frank Reich, and this is what it should be about. This is a guy that actually, you know, spent from 2008 to I think 2011 was actually on the Colts coaching staff. You know, he started his career as a staff assistant. He became the quarterback's coach for a couple years, 2009 to 2010. He was a wide receiver's coach for 1 year before running off to Arizona to be their wide receiver's coach. He obviously from there went on to the Chargers and then two seasons there in Philadelphia. I like it. I think this guy's got enough experience now. He was part of what happened now in Philadelphia. It just goes to show you that in today's NFL, if you have the right coaching and you attack free agency right, and you have a good couple of drafts, you can go from worst to first in a hurry, right? I mean, literally in a hurry. I mean, what were the Eagles in 2016, David?
The Eagles in 2016 went last in their division, 7-9. I don't even remember.
I'm pulling it up right now, but I think they were last in their division. Yes, 7-9, 2-4 in the division, 5-7 in the conference. And what were they averaging? Something like just over 20 points a game or whatnot. Now, obviously, one of those wins were against the Steelers early in the season. But it speaks volumes. Nobody and their brother would have predicted after Carson Wentz went down that Nick Foles, you know, what would happen with that team there during the playoff run and all like that. There's a lot. I think there's a lot NFL teams can learn. And you just mentioned talking about the article, Peter King. I look forward to reading that. But there's a lot to learn about what the Eagles have been able to do over the course of the last couple seasons here. And having a guy that was part of that, Frank Wright, who's, in my opinion, a brilliant offensive mind. A guy that's actually played in the league, you know, not too terribly too far removed from playing a league. Like I said, I think they did. I think in the long run, this will work out better for them having him as the head coach.
And just to that point about playing in the league and not playing in the league, I mean, you know, clearly Belichick didn't play in the league. Mike Tomlin didn't play in the league. You look at a guy like Doug Peterson, would you rather have Doug Peterson or would you rather have Brett Favre as your head coach? Doug Peterson was a backup in the NFL, but he's a smart guy. He understands what's going on. He has experience. I mean, it's, you know, the idea, picking out a head coach is picking out a head coach. And honest to God, if you don't sit in the room and grill, my biggest fault for this whole process for most of these teams is that they don't sit and spend 3 hours with 50 guys rather than with 6 guys. You should talk to 50 guys just to educate yourself, to learn something about your team, because if a guy's prepared, they're going to come in and tell you about your team. You get some information. This is a process I don't think the league carries out particularly well. And, you know, we'll see how, if that ever changes. But I agree with you. Look, I'm not going to slam Josh McDaniel here as a coach. It's not, but I certainly think Frank Reich, it'd be an interesting opportunity for him. Frank Reich is best known as a football player for orchestrating the biggest comeback in NFL playoff history. And I don't know definitively the biggest comeback in college football history, but when he played at Maryland, he was down 31-0 to Miami in a college game that they came back and won 42-40. And then of course the story of playing, what was it, against Warren Moon and the Houston Oilers, that they're down, what, 31-3 or whatever, and they come back and win 38-35. So Frank Reich's got that in his back pocket. That's in his, I'm sure, on his Wikipedia page.
What you know, we already talked a little bit about this. What are some of the things that NFL teams around the league can learn or should learn from the Philadelphia Eagles over the course of the last two seasons?
That's a really good question.
Well, we talked about you don't need one main running back, right? I mean, that's first and foremost. You can get away with a committee type approach. So I think that's first and foremost. Second,
I think one of the things that we saw with the Eagles, a couple things. One is, and this to me really shone through in this article that I read, and I think this is Doug Peterson's core philosophy. Look, Peterson was at Kansas City under Andy Reid. He had, you know, he's been with the Eagles before. He gets hired, and he is a coach who is fully in full belief that the coaching situation is a completely inclusive process. And when in this article, you'll see him talk about, look, it's not about me. It's not about one individual player. It is the team concept. And I do think most coaches, you know, in the NFL think this and believe this, and that's their philosophy. Whether they actually do it might be a little bit of a different thing. And so, you know, you get a good staff and you allow them to do their job. So that's on the coaching side. I think what we saw with the Eagles, and this is one of the things about if you're able to hit on a quarterback high and early, or better yet, late and early, like a Russell Wilson is probably the best example. It just frees you so much money to then go out and try to improve your team. Now, you still have to have the personnel guys to make the right decisions with that. But them knowing that Carson Wentz was going to be their guy going in, and, you know, we've seen this now with the Rams, and we've seen it, you know, with a couple of the teams. Tampa Bay has not done it successfully. Tennessee has not done it particularly successfully, a little bit better. You can supplement your team in so many different ways with talented players. And you look at the Eagles' defense, and I think the thing that Dave, to me, was you looked at all three levels, and they had really good players at all three levels with no weaknesses. And they were able to survive the loss of their starting quarterback, the loss of their starting left tackle offensively without kind of, you know, Alshon Jeffrey's a name receiver, but, you know, without a ton of name players on their offense. Zach Ertz is a good tight end, a very good tight end. And Alshon Jeffrey's, I would say, borderline top 10, 15 receiver in the NFL. And then a running back they traded for, a quarterback who was a journeyman. I mean, you know, I think you do see that if you're a balanced team that does a lot of things well, you know, you can win in the league.
You know, they had a good offensive line, but let's face it, Vaitai Halapulu.
Good luck.
Yeah. You had Jason Peters over there on the left side, right? But you lost him. It just goes – and look, you know, the kid that replaced Jason Peters there, not a great left tackle, but good enough. You know, you get the ball out of the quarterback's hands quick enough, you don't have to worry about your left tackle breaking down there. You know, I think, look, the big takeaway is obviously you got to have a franchise quarterback. They have that in Carson Wentz, or seemingly do. The fact that they, you know, would anybody other than Nick Foles been able to take that team forward, you know? Could Landry Jones have done, you know, pulled a Nick Foles to close out the season? You know, I think you just have to be mindful that they did good to have Nick Foles. When they signed Nick Foles to the contract that they did, it was good insurance on their part.
That's a good, really good point.
A guy that was somewhat, you know, that had experience.
Because but listen, we say it. I'm sure they said it and said, well, you know, if how many people said this on Twitter the minute it happened, and how many people say it all the time about Ben or anybody else? Well, if Ben goes down, you know, they're not going to the Super Bowl anyway. Who cares? I'm sure people said when Wentz went down, okay, the season's over. You know, we'll look to next year. Who cares about the rest of this season? I'm sure that was the feeling across the board in Philadelphia. I guarantee it.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Now, here's the thing, though, and here's the thing when it comes to the Steelers. I mean, there's no doubt that the Steelers have the offensive pieces in place to be top five, you know, offense. The thing is can the defense do enough? And the Eagles' defense really, and you know, I know you can go through because recent media coverage and all during the Super Bowl, you can name off a ton of their players, but how many star players do they have? You know?
I think the good thing is I think there were three or four. Starting with Fletcher Cox.
Brandon Graham, obviously. But a lot of people listen to this podcast know the names because
we just saw him play three nationally televised games.
Right, because they know the names. But how many of these guys are doing commercial? How many of these guys are faces?
you couldn't pick them out of a lineup. You couldn't pick them out. That's true. I don't think people aren't. People might have been able to pick Ryan Shazier out because he has a distinctive look, but nobody's picking out. Brandon Graham or Fletcher Cox. Guys wear a helmet. They're not even picking out Malcolm Jenkins. I mean, their names – look, and I'll put myself in that crowd. Names, you put a jersey on guys, I'll identify them. But if they're walking through Walmart, I'm not picking them out. And, in this sport, if it's not in your town, most people probably know what Cam Hayward looks like, but I'm guessing they don't know what Tyson Alualu looks like.
Yeah, that's a great point. And look, I think the overarching things are is you have to have a franchise quarterback, which they do, and the Steelers obviously do. You got to be able to play some defense late in the year. We saw the Steelers a couple years ago start off very poorly. The rookie year of Artie Burns and Sean Davis and Javon Hargrave. We saw that defense start off and just absolutely miserable first half of the season. And then they got it together in the second half of the season. And then lo and behold, you play the Patriots and then you just sit there and play zone. You were asking for it then, and no wonder that they shredded that defense there.
You can put that on, again, there a lot of the losses here, the coaching staff bears its share of the burden the past two playoff exits, for sure.
You have to have rushing coverage, and rushing coverage means being able to rush and play man on the back end of it. And yes, we saw them do it more last year talking about the Steelers, but to me, they got to get themselves in a situation where they can do it even more moving forward here. This team, and thankfully my adjusted net yards per passing attempt stat stood thanks to the Eagles this year. But realistically, in today's NFL, and didn't Rooney mention something along these lines during his talk that, it's a lot harder to play defense in the NFL today, yada, yada. Is that a cop-out? A little bit, yeah.
Well, the rules have changed, and that's fair, so it does make it a little bit harder.
Yeah, but with that said, you still got to be able to put a defense together that can keep you around. The days of the Tampa Bay defense and whatever year it was, 2000, 2001, that had a 2.8 adjusted net yards per passing attempt, those days are over, okay? I don't know. We saw Jacksonville Jaguars field a very good defense this year with a really low adjusted net yards number, but realistically, if you have a good offense in this league, you need to have a defense that can post around 5.0 or less adjusted net yards per passing attempt number. That's it. End of story. Sacks. Have you been paying attention with me contextualizing some of these sacks from last year, or really all these sacks from last year? I'm down to, I think all I have to do now is Sean Davis, Cameron Hayward, and Vince Williams, I think, are the three players I've yet to do.
But, yeah, we talk about this. How often is it, third and seven, and the quarterback doesn't have time to get in a five-step drop because he gets run over by the pass rush? Not very often.
Bad decisions by quarterbacks happen around the league, blown assignments and all like that. But, outside of Cam Hayward, I people are going to love the Cam Hayward one. You want to talk about some high-quality sacks. There were some high-quality sacks there. And really, Vince Williams, even though he's a guy you don't think of a guy that's going to have high sack totals, and probably that what he registered last year is probably going to be a career high for him. But he beat some running backs. I mean, it's one thing to beat a guy that you should beat, right? You would expect a linebacker to destroy a running back every time, unless that running back's named Le'Veon Bell. But the manner in which you beat them also can be impressive as well. In other words, not just beating them, but, I mean, just annihilate them. And Vince Williams did that. But, you know, outside of those guys and a handful of other sacks here and there, you know, how many of you, I don't know if you saw the breakdown of Watt and Dupree. And look, all sacks are fine. Nobody's going to argue that you don't like having almost 60 sacks in a season. However, you know, name me the highest quality sack by a outside linebacker last year, David.
Well, I don't have it off the top of my head, but I don't have a ton to choose from. So, yeah, and we've cataloged Buds already. So I don't know. Pick one of TJ's.
How about James Harrison against the Chiefs?
Yeah, I mean, you know, really the play. And I don't know if it goes down as a sack. It's the last play against the Ravens.
Yeah, absolutely. It did go down in a sack, and it's a high-effort sack. There's nothing wrong with high-effort sacks. The thing is, and look, I mean, in today's NFL, it is so hard to get a sack unless. And look, even T.J. Watt. Remember the game against the Bengals? Go for those that missed it. Go look at the contextualizing his sacks there. Him winning to the inside against the Cincinnati Bengals, and he shoots through that gap and has a sack in under 3 seconds of Andy Dalton. In today's NFL, if you can get a sack in less than three seconds, something's probably gone, horribly bad offense or really just a defensive player just flat out whooped his guy in a hurry and got in the backfield back there. So, time to sack, really has less importance nowadays, more so than, the other ways that you're able to get to the quarterback. To see some of these sacks run, I guess I should preface this by all saying, to see some of these sacks run over 4 seconds, well, nothing wrong with a high-effort sack, and that's exactly because if Watt and James Harrison did not flush Flacco from the pocket on that play, well, then they don't get the sack. So, the pressures absolutely mean a lot. But, I think it goes back to all this. When you go back and look at the outside linebackers as a whole, the group, there weren't a lot of high-quality sacks. And that's one thing. You don't see those Von Miller-type sacks, if you will, on a consistent basis.
Right. Kind of thing. Yeah, and the Steelers haven't had that guy for 7 or 8 years. So, it's the biggest weakness on the defense. It has been the biggest weakness on the defense. It's not probably going to be where they go with the first pick of the draft. Certainly what they do in free agency will impact decision-making. But if you look at where things stand right now, it's been glaring. It's been glaring since we talked about it in November. I mean, it's inside linebacker and safety – or where the Steelers need to go on defense, and that's where I expect them to go on defense, and whether that's through free agency or the draft. But nobody's closing any books on certainly obviously not on T.J. Watt, but you're not doing it on Bud Dupree at this point either. You just need to see a level of improvement that I certainly thought we were going to see this year that we didn't see in terms of being a dominant edge rusher. So some of this will the Steelers change their philosophy at all in terms of how they rush the passer and how they drop guys in coverage? One of the good things about the athleticism of a Watt and a Dupree is you can ask them to drop in coverage and feel good about it. But it's still, you still need somebody getting after the passer, and that is on the job description. That's first. Everything else is secondary.
Here we are talking about all these sacks. David, how many sacks did the Philadelphia Eagles have during the regular season?
Well, not as many as the Steelers.
We know that, right? 38, David. 38. How many players had double-digit sacks for the Eagles during the regular season?
I would guess maybe one or zero. I mean, look, I know Cox – I'm 90% sure Cox didn't, and if Brandon Graham didn't, I'm guessing zero.
Brandon Graham had 9.5, led the team – They did not. The next on the list, Fletcher Cox, 5.5. Chris Long, 5. Derek Barnett, the rookie, 5. Vinny Curry, 3. Timmy Jernigan, 2.5. Michael Kendricks, inside linebacker, 2. And then, of course, five or six players with one each. So, sacks are not, you know, how many times have we said over the years here, sacks are not the end-all, do-all. It's the consistent pressure. And I think if you look at them as a whole and how they were able to, you know, consistently probably get pressure on the opposing quarterback means a whole hell of a lot about sacks. So it's easy to climb in here and say, sack, you know, look at the Steelers and that high sack number and think, oh, wow, impressive. But, I mean, look on the back end, all those explosive and double and triple explosive plays that they gave up. So, you know, it gets tiresome sometimes to hear the coaching, you know, the Steelers coaching staff go rush and coverage go hand in hand. But it really, really does. But with that said, that, you know, they got to get better production off the edge as far as pressure goes. And I would not, you know me, David, every year I'm up for drafting about 4 or 5 edge rushers. And it would not hurt my feelings if they took one in the first 3 or 4 rounds this year. Because if Bud Dupree doesn't work out, it sure would not be nice to have a guy that's not a rookie be able to step in there, you know, either late in the 2018 season or you know, early 2019.
Yeah, and when you talk about teams that don't let guys go, the positions you aren't letting guys go generally, not exclusively, but generally are obviously quarterback and dominant edge rusher. You know, we're going to see the Patriots let Malcolm Butler walk here. We've seen some high-priced quarterbacks walk in years past. That doesn't seem to be have the same demand. Josh Norman, obviously, they pulled the tag on him. Carolina did a few years ago. Go back to Nnamdi Asamoah. You just pick, you know, plenty of high-end quarterbacks, cornerbacks have changed teams. But you don't see, you know, I'm sure somebody can come up with the exception, but you rarely see guys like Von Miller get the opportunity to test free agency after a first contract. They're either going to be the highest defensive play pair in the game, they're going to be franchised, you know, and then try to get a deal worked out because you know, they're not many, you know, that may be the position where they're the fewest guys who are, you know, that we consider elite and game-changing players. There are not many Antonio Browns, there are not many Von Millers.
You know, talking about this whole pressure and thing, Matthew Marksey wrote about it this morning, talking about this. You know what gets me excited is this next gen stats and stuff like that, David. The steps right now that fans and bloggers and media and those kind of things are making as far as stats go is just it's incredible. And I can't get enough of it. Well, Matt Harmon of NFL.com posted it. So is doing a next gen stats top 10 list, and he just covered the pass rushing units, talking about kind of pressures, and the Eagles ranked number 1, David, in the league in total pressures, 291, according to Next Gen Stats. And the top pass rusher, obviously, Brandon Graham, 47 pressures. So where did the Steelers, and you know, probably not surprising, the Los Angeles Rams ranked 4th with 260, and I don't need to tell you who was their top pass rusher.
Yeah, and you know, again, we talk about inside pressure, and what do those two guys have? Maybe the two best inside guys in the game in Aaron Donald and Fletcher Cox.
Exactly. The Jaguars 5th, the Panthers 6th. Believe it or not, the Tennessee Titans 7th. Total pressure is 242. Even the probably not a surprise with the kind of season that Chandler Jones did, that the Cardinals finished 8th. But the Steelers finished 9th overall in total pressures with 230, and it's probably not a surprise who their top pressure pass rusher was.
I'm sorry, that was the for who?
For the Steelers, they finished ninth on.
Yeah, I assume it was Cam, right?
Right, Cameron Hayward. Now, you know, not a bad thing, but boy, you sure would. He has there. T.J. Watt was just the beginning of what's to come. Watt racked up 33 pressures on 261 pass rushing plays, leading the group with 12.6% pressure rate. Okay. So obviously ahead of Bud Dupree, right? And we talked about Vince Williams had 16 pressures and Ryan Shazier had 7. He doesn't list what Bud Dupree in here, but you know, it just goes back to the saying that you know, Bud Dupree probably not cutting it right now. Ninth is great on this list, but boy, it sure feels like with the talent that the Steelers have up front or the pedigree of talent that the Steelers have up front, you would kind of expect that to be maybe top five, right?
Yeah. I mean, I guess. I mean, but I guess the point is that they don't have maybe, you know, they had the pedigree, but maybe those guys haven't lived up to the pedigree yet. So I'm sure, you know, I'm sure there are 10 teams out there that feel that they should be, you know, top five. So that's, I think that's a little location bias on our part.
All right. No Patriots in this top 10.
I would be surprised. You know, the Patriots are a fascinating story of how bad their defense was for the first five games of the season, how good it was on paper, but you know, the Steelers are the only good offense they played the rest of the season, and you know, until the Super Bowl. I mean, let's face it. I mean, they played Tennessee and they played the Jags in the AFC playoffs. That isn't exactly, you know, murderer's row of offensive teams. And the Eagles were seen as a good offensive team, not a great offensive team, and they tore them to pieces. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what the Patriots defense looks like a year from now, or for opening day this year versus, you know, the Super Bowl. If it's a complete makeover or how they manage that, because, you know, it is the one time you might just look at the schedule and just say, boy, it all worked out for them like a dream. And it was a year that they should not have been the AFC representative. But they were, so they got there, and that's all that matters.
Oh, yeah, look, I mean, you got to, you know, getting there is half the battle, you know, and they got there. All right, interesting week for the San Francisco 49ers, correct?
The interesting thing was the bad thing that happened for him. And, you know, you wonder how many chances you're going to get here because this one's a big deal. And for those who didn't hear the news, domestic violence charge after a marijuana possession charge in Alabama, and anybody equating the two is just, you know, they're not, you know, the headline obviously is, I'm trying to complete the Alabama, Reuben Foster, who fell to the Niners at 31st in the draft after some suggesting he might be a top five pick. Well, you know, there were character issues. John Lynch got satisfied with the guy who he was and what kind of guy he was going to be. Look, me and I think most people who listen to this, marijuana possession arrested for and, you know, $1,000 fine or whatever it was. I'm not dismissing it if it's against the law. In many states, it's not against the law, but it's a non-event. But if you get a domestic violence charge and you have assault weapon possession, it's a whole different level, a whole different kettle of fish. Of offense, and you know, I would imagine the league will take significant action if this is proven to be a real thing, and go from there. So they've got to deal with that, but they've got their, you know, they know they've got their franchise quarterback locked up for the next 5 years.
Boy, I remember so many people tweeting me saying, "Boy, the Steelers should take Reuben Foster instead of T.J. Watt." Not long after that, that drafted, the red flags were there with Reuben Foster. Let me tell you, you know, believe it or not, David, it seems like yesterday the new CBA was signed, but you know, we're coming up on, it's getting close that we're getting close to that 10-year CBA expiring. There's, you know, both sides say there's not going to be an extension that's going to happen. So in short, you know, look, I like it or not, folks, I think we're headed for another lockout because these two sides really have a lot to talk about. Not that they didn't have last time, but I think they learned. They learned a lot from what went down last time. Let me ask you: in this next CBA, David, is marijuana going to be legalized? I mean, is that something? Do you think that that you know that's going to be thrown out as far as you know players.
Well, I just saw it was in California that they were going to apply current status to all pending and former cases, meaning that if you got charged with something in the past when it was illegal and now it's not, they're just going to throw it out. Look, I don't think the NFL is looking to get its players in trouble for marijuana possession. So I think they will look to decriminalize and depunish, you know, depunish that as much as possible. And I think that's absolutely the right move.
Well, I sure wish they would have done that in the state of Florida several years ago. no comment. Good on your part. I mean, you know, players.
Domestic violence is just a whole different world. It's just forget the fact that in today's environment, because it should have been this way always. Domestic violence is, you know, a heinous crime, and you know, who was the guy, Dave, for the Niners and the Raiders, and who just had offense after offense?
Oh, Alden Smith.
Alden Smith. I mean, you see these guys at a very young age go down the wrong path, you know, a couple times. Again, I ignore the marijuana stuff, but you have an assault weapon at 23, and you commit domestic violence. Jeez, you just hope that he is just not off the rails too far to get it back and have a productive life and career.
You know, and it goes back to who was the kid, the other Alabama linebacker, McClain.
Ronaldo McClain, of course. And I mean, he how many charges did he have? Weapons charges. Didn't he have a gun to somebody's head at some point?
Yeah, I mean, he did a lot. That's for sure. How much of that worries about you? Maybe about the culture of what goes on at the Alabama program, or is it just I mean, obviously it happens around the league from players that come out of various colleges, but boy.
It's worth noting. I mean, you know, is Alabama's filter one thing and one thing only? Bring me your best.
Right. Bring me your best. The heck with the rest. You know, it's going to be interesting what happens with Reuben Foster. Boy, the Jimmy Garoppolo deal. Look, we knew a deal was probably going to come. It was kind of interesting to see Garoppolo kind of not force the franchise tag first. But he got paid. An interesting structure on that deal. And they obviously had a lot of cap room to work with this year. $74.1 million in injury guarantee will have already kicked in at year one, total of $42.6 million. He received, David, as part. You know, the funny thing about it is his signing bonus for this big deal. Just $7 million, okay?
Now, but what did he get? Did he get 91, 93 guaranteed or something?
Well, here it is. He got a signing bonus of $7 million. He got a guaranteed roster bonus this year of $28 million, okay? Base salary guaranteed, fully guaranteed in 2018, of $6.2 million. So he's earning... he's going to earn this year $42.6 million. And basically, I mapped out this deal on Twitter as well, too, you know, in general fashion so people could see it laid out. This is it's hard not to like this contract for both sides. Jimmy Garoppolo is going to make a ton of cash, assuming he plays out the 5 years and easily going to make good money over the first 2 years. But really, it's a 2-year contract with him.
He had 3 years. I thought he had 3 years and $90 million guaranteed.
No. Here's what Adam Schefter. Let's see. Year one total, $42.6 million. $74.1 million injury guarantee already kicked in. Base salaries guaranteed, let's see, 7.5 of $17.2 million of his base salary in 2019 guaranteed at signing. For 2019, he'll make 18 points. But basically, his third-year salary of $23.8 million, $15.7 million of that is guaranteed for injury only. Okay.
Yeah. So 74.1 guaranteed with injury and 48.7 the true guarantee at signing. So yeah, a little less than I thought it was. Yeah.
If the 49ers wanted to, they could cut him before April 2020, and he would have made $61.2 million and be a free agent at that point.
Good work if you can get it. 7 NFL starts.
Well, the good thing too is, I mean, it's a win-win situation for the 49ers.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
They traded for.
So they're hoping they don't cut him. Is your point?
Right. Exactly. And look, I went on record several weeks. They're gonna win a Super Bowl in his first 5 years of this, with the 49ers. I firmly
make
believe
sure
that.
You get 15-1 in Vegas because you could. I'm sure you could get 30-1 right now on that bet.
I think
a big statement. If you're right, I will trumpet it from the hills because obviously it's very easy to say the other. You know, pick all. If you get all 31 other teams every year, you're a lot better off. So
all right. I want credit for this now.
Oh yeah, I got it down, man. I mean, that's a 30-1 type of bet because they're not 30-1 this year, and you get into each of the other years, I think that's 30-1 is probably you go walk over to the casino and see what they give you.
I think he's a good quarterback, and I think they're going to. I think Lynch is going to do things right there. And they got some, look, I'm not a huge fan of their head coach, but I don't think he can screw this up. And I really think that they're going to be a force in that. And look at that division over there. I mean, we're starting to see Seattle kind of be a, without the Legion of Boom, kind of be a meh. Matt team, if you will. Obviously, the Rams are up and coming. The Cards are down. Who would you rather have right now as your quarterback, David? Jared Goff or Jimmy Garoppolo?
Oh, that's a good question. Obviously, the advantage of Goff is he's going to be a lot cheaper here the next 2 years. But just in terms of pure playing, talent standpoint, probably I'd probably lean ever so slightly, not significantly, but ever so slightly to Garoppolo.
All right, and based on do you think the Rams take a step forward or backwards or stay the same?
I think the Rams are going to be a force. I think they're. I really, the Rams. They threw some pieces at the wall. And, they took some flyers on guys like Sammy Watkins and a couple guys on the defensive side of the ball. The corner who got hurt, a couple other guys, and they generally worked out. So I give them, I give them huge credit for that. But I think they'll get more of the firm pieces in place now, and get some help around Aaron Donald defensively because as good as Donald was, and some of the other players, they weren't that good defensively, and that's where the strides can be made here.
Oh, I disagree. I thought Wade Phillips did an amazing job with that defense first year there. And in fact, looking at their adjusted net yards per passing attempt, they were 5.1. They had the same. They had the 1, 2, 3, 4. They were tied for fifth lowest adjusted net yards per passing attempt number in the league. They had the same numbers as the Philadelphia Eagles did last year. So I disagree. I think if anything, I think that offense might take a step back in it, and their defense might get a little bit.
On the course of the season, they gave up a couple more points than the Steelers did, and at the end of the day, that is the measure.
Yeah. All right. They were 11-5 last year. Are they going to take a step forward or backwards?
I'll put them right. You'd be crazy to pick any team to improve on 11-5. I'll put them right where they are.
All right. No way three teams make it out of that division to the playoffs, right?
No way. No.
Okay. So will two? I know we're way early here, talking about this stuff.
Yeah. But. I mean, look, I like where the Niners are headed. I like where the Rams are.
All right. Interesting week for the 49ers, to say the least. It'll be interesting.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we got to wrap things up. I got a couple things I got to take care of today. And we certainly filled an hour plus, which was, you know, and we didn't even get to everything we wanted to get to.
So. Right. We'll talk more about some of the things we missed on Friday there. At least we have something to talk to if there's no news, no major signing or anything moving forward here at the end of this week. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and you want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar. Steelers Depot, a lot of pre-draft, a lot of draft profiles coming out right now. Sack breakdowns, all those kind of things as well. So we hope you're checking in on the site, three, four, five times a day, because we try to keep content flowing all day. In the meantime, David, and until Friday, have a good week.
Yep, see you Friday as always. Thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. Enjoy your Valentine's Day.